Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Legacy Leaders Radio.
Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome again to Legacy Leader Radio here in Midtown Atlanta. As you know, the purpose of Legacy Leader Radio is to bring greatness alive, people who do great things in our country and around the world, who change people's lives from bring them up, and people who have the guts to make differences and to help other people be the best of who they can be. Based on that theme and based on what we're going to do today, as I have the honor and the pleasure of introducing who I believe some of the top members of a great organization, Franklin Covey. I have in the studio today Doug Pusey. I also have Mark Josie, General Manager for the Eastern Division of Franklin Covey. And gentlemen, welcome, welcome, welcome to Legacy Leader Radio.
Hi, Jack.
Okay. Mark, Doug, tell us who you are.
I'm Doug Pusey. I'm an area director. Basically, I work in the state of Georgia, mm-hmm. and I get to work with a lot of great organizations in the Atlanta area with a great team. So
great, great. And as you know, ladies and gentlemen, I cannot be successful in this show without introducing to you my right-hand man, Brother Mike. Mike, say hello.
Hey, Jack. It's been a week, man.
I know. It's been a great week. You been busy?
Trying to stay busier, so okay. That's a good thing. But it's good to be back in the studio with you, Jack.
It is. It is. Thank you very much. Thank you. Well, let's get right to it. Mark, tell us about who is Franklin Covey.
Who is Franklin Covey? Yeah. So Franklin Covey is a performance improvement company. We specialize in helping organizations solve problems that require a change in human behavior. Mm-hmm. So, you know, anytime companies are trying to improve productivity, drive some kind of a metric that requires a change in behavior where people have to learn something new, do something different, mm-hmm. that's the business that we're in.
How successful has Franklin Covey been in doing that? And first, let me just back up. How long has Franklin Covey been around?
Franklin Covey's been around, I guess it depends on what you mean by Franklin Covey. Franklin Covey was an amalgam of a lot of different companies. I actually started with Covey Leadership Center mm-hmm. back in about 1989. So, you know, you had Covey Leadership Center that was an organization that was built off of Stephen Covey's organization. Mm-hmm. And then Franklin Quest, which was a time management company, mm-hmm. and then there was a variety of other companies that were acquired by Franklin Quest before we came along, and I think it was about 1995 when, you know, we came together with Franklin Quest and Covey Leadership Center to form Franklin Covey.
Okay.
So I think 1995 was about the time where Franklin Covey kind of came together. Yeah.
And Stephen Covey, Dr. Stephen Covey, tell us about Dr. Covey and his legacy.
Well, his greatest legacy, I guess, was the Seven Habits of Highly Effective People book, which he published in 1989. I was at the company at the time when it was published. And, you know, there's a lot of debate at the time when we published the book, whether we should actually publish it or not, because the reality is a lot of great work like Dr. Covey's, you know, usually people write a book and then they create a training program based on the book. It actually happened just the opposite way with Dr. Covey's work, where he had been doing work in the trenches with companies and boardrooms and work sessions for years and years before the book was ever written, which is why I think it was so great. But, you know, the book has had that he wrote and worked on for years and years. It's had a huge impact. It's in the 25th year anniversary right now. We've sold probably close to 30 million copies of the mm-hmm. book. Mm-hmm. We've trained probably over 6 million leaders.
Wow.
So, you know, it's had a huge impact.
Yeah. That's a big number.
So
what was the controversy? Why did you guys debate on publishing it or not?
Well, because the business of the company was to do training, and it was our IP. And at the time, we thought, well, if we print this material and get it out there, are we just giving away our content? And people are going to take it, and we're going to lose control. So, you know, we made the best choice, which is let's print it, let's get it out there, let's get it, it, you know, people familiar with it, and it was a great decision to do that. Our first year, we sold 1 million copies of the book, which is great, and ever since then, it just created a wake for our company. So even though we were scared of it, it was a pretty big decision for us.
I read somewhere or learned that The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People is one of the most successful self-help, if I can say that word, that publishing the book is one of the most successful books in the world ever written, along with Viktor Frankl's book. Am I on track there, or am I close, Doug?
Yeah. You're talking about Man's Search for Meaning.
Right.
You know, Seven Habits has been impactful, and it has sold millions and millions of copies. And, you know, it's fun to see that his legacy, it's still a best-selling book today. You know, they don't even put it on the bestseller list, but even today it beats most of our other books. Mm-hmm. And what he did is he wrote this thing, and I think that the brilliance of it is it's a bit of a manual. They didn't hold back. They really did say everything that we know about, you know, Seven Habits. And it's just impacted so many lives and created a legacy for Stephen that, you know, since we lost him this year, it's fun to see how big an impact it has and how it keeps going.
Yeah, he's got one heck of a legacy. And you keep mentioning the Seven Habits. For those of us that aren't familiar with it, or those of us that are and those that are not are listening today, would either one of you want to take a gander at what the Seven Habits are? You want me to take that, or
do you want me to tell you what they are?
Yeah, because people out there are going, okay, they're talking about the Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. Now, I know I've come across people that have heard about the Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, but they really don't know until somebody sits down and goes, well, let me tell you about it.
Yeah. That'd be me, by the way.
Yeah. You? Okay.
Heard about it. I know that the book was published when I was born, so yeah. I want to make you guys feel old there.
Yeah.
But I don't know what they
Thanks,
are.
Mike.
Yeah, no problem. Here helps.
You're one of the first people to ever admit that you haven't read it.
Yes.
I have not read it.
All right, you got to get on it.
All right.
So, you know, the Seven Habits is basically a social operating system for creating winning teams for companies, and it's also a guidebook for personal effectiveness and productivity, how to have better relationships. And the essence, if you really deconstruct the Seven Habits, it's really built around three core ideas. Mm-hmm. One, you know, it kind of covers levels of maturity for individuals. And so, you know, typically as individuals, we start out in a dependent level of maturity.
All right.
Where, you know, my mindset is around you. I need you in order to do something or to produce a result. I go to a new job and I don't know what to do, so I'm dependent upon you. I could be financially dependent, or mm-hmm. I can't take care of myself. I could be emotionally dependent, where my sense of self-worth comes from you. So we all kind of start out, even as babies in life, we start as dependent, right?
To some extent, right.
To some extent, right. And then
Mike thinks he's less than others.
Yeah. And then we eventually evolve, hopefully, into independence, which is kind of, you know, we're gangly teenagers now and think we know everything. And we, you know, independence is kind of the mindset, you know, I'll do my part, you do your part, and let's try not to get in each other's way. And if we do, let's compete against
each
other.
Yeah, you stay on your side of the street and I'll stay on my side of the street. Yeah,
across that's right.
The hallway. Yeah, okay.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, and then the highest level of maturity that we're all really going after is kind of a state of interdependence, which is, you know, I've got my talents, you've got your talents, and together we can work together to produce something more than what we could do alone.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in order for individuals, in order for cultures to get to those levels, it requires some work and it requires some disciplines, and that's kind of where the habits come in. And the habits are all kind of based around how do I move from dependence, independence to interdependence. So the first three habits really revolve around personal leadership. So, you know, be proactive is about the habit of responsibility. How do I make sure that I'm a product of my choices rather than just my circumstances?
Right. Habit one.
Mm-hmm. Habit two is begin with the end in mind, which is the habit of personal vision. Which is, where do I want to go as an individual? What do I want to do in my life? You know, if I'm truly the programmer of my life, what's the program going to be? Mm-hmm. So whether I'm thinking about it in the context of an individual or a team or an organization, you know, the ideas begin with the end in mind. The third habit is put first things first. Once I know what it is I want, once I understand the blueprint, habit three is about the habit of execution, which is how do I organize and execute around my priorities and actually get stuff done?
Yeah. That's and we the private victory, our personal victory.
That's right.
Before we move further into that, I'd like to, if I can share a story with you on the Seven Habits. It's been a transitional, a very transformational experience for me going through the Seven Habits, and I'll tell you why, and I'll share this with you and share it with my listeners. Is my father and I weren't exactly the best of friends growing up, and my father was an angry man, and I believe at some point possessed some of those traits. There was a point in my life when I had to sit back and ask myself, okay, what's working for me? What's not working for me? What do I need to do? And one of the first things that I chose to do, and after going through the Seven Habits, and in the Seven Habits, ladies and gentlemen, there's and Mark alluded to it as being a transitional person. It's a person that's being proactive. And how do I change the world around me? How do I change myself? And how can I change my organization? On my personal note, I chose to forgive my dad. And I actually was with my father just a few weeks before he passed away. And I had the opportunity to sit down with him and ask him some questions that I think every son should have the opportunity to ask their dad, you know, when you get towards the end. And so it was tough for me, but I knew I had to make a change. And that's where being proactive came for me, when I actually sat there at my dad's bedside in the hospital and forgave him and asked him some very tough questions. And once I was able to do that with my father, it made life a lot easier, because it felt as if a big burden had been lifted off my shoulders, and I was able to move forward and then have the end in mind and then go for first things first. But you have to make that conscious choice that here's what I say to myself, is I choose to look at my life differently. I choose not to be dependent. When we get sick and tired of being sick and tired is when we'll start to move forward in our lives. And so that's how the Seven Habits have been very transformational to me. And
great story.
It was tough. But you know what? That was a first step. So I applaud Franklin Covey and the Seven Habits for having that impact on my life. So go ahead, please.
It's one of the things that we love about working for this organization is we work with incredible organizations out there that are trying to produce big results. Mm-hmm. But at the heart of it, it's a bunch of individuals. And
yeah,
this Seven Habits impacts individuals, and it sets them up in a way that they can be successful, that they can do the things and function in an environment that needs to be highly effective. Mm-hmm. And I mean, to be honest, we just hear stories all the time about how it impacted people, and they're deep and they mean a lot, like what you just expressed.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, that makes coming to work kind of fun.
Yeah,
We feel like we're doing something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What a great legacy.
Well, and you know, back to your story, I think habit one's a pretty big deal. I think you mentioned that, where mm-hmm. a lot of people might come from a background like yours or others, where and they might have the tendency to blame, you know, oh gosh, you know, the reason my life is so miserable right now is because of my father. And this, you know, the material, the Seven Habits material, really gets people to think, you know what, I'm not dependent on anybody else. I'm responsible for my life and responsible for my choices. And even though I came from this type of an environment, I can break out of it. I can do something different. That's the
self-accountability.
Yeah.
And I also think that, and you guys may know it better than I do, but Dr. Covey was talking about you're not a victim of your genes, your upbringing, however he puts that so eloquently. And that hit me hard, because when I hear people, the people with victim mentality, you know, like Eeyore, you know, there's always a dark cloud over them.
Yeah.
People that are always a victim, and you just want to just go, man, come on, you know, you can get past this. So yeah. I'm sorry, Doug, you had something.
Well, no, I just, to echo what you're saying, to follow on is you said the word transition figure, and you know, it's in Seven Habits. I don't know if he originated the term or not, but even as you say it, you can hear the power of that. Mm-hmm. The fact that I can change, I'm not dependent on what came from the past. And I can be a person that not only increases it or makes it better, But the way you said it is a complete 180, a transition figure. Mm-hmm. And that's a neat thing to do. And I love that part of the seven habits as one of the foundational principles.
And that's why, correct me if I'm wrong, it's very, very important to know yourself first. And I believe in Covey language, it's the private victory. Mm-hmm. The private victory, know yourself first and choose to make a difference in your life or somebody else's life, and then have an end in mind. So after I've managed myself in the private victory, what happens next, Mark, Doug?
Yeah, so yeah. After we've had a chance to kind of get our own house in order,
yeah.
You know, great
yeah.
leaders, before they can lead a team or an organization or anything else, they first have to lead themselves. So that's where we start, is with the mm-hmm. private victory. And then moving from independence to interdependence is where we get into habit four, which is think win-win, which is really a mindset.
Yeah, yeah.
Around mm-hmm. saying, you know what, it's not just about me. It's about what's important to others and their needs. Habit five, so that's kind of the root, the mindset. Habit five is about the skill or the communication process. Think first, understand. I got to be able to listen to people effectively, and I got to have some skills in that area. I also need to be understood as well, which both of those things require a high degree of character.
That's the old Confucius
yeah.
thing, right? Seek first, understand, then to be understood. Is that right?
Well, that may be Confucius, but today it's seven habits. Right, how I think people.
Right. But
right
it speaks to its congruity. Yeah. You
we,
know?
We like to attribute most really good sayings to Stephen Covey, if you don't mind.
So Confucius got that.
Thanks for throwing that out there, Mike.
I don't think Confucius is getting any rights to that. I think he's a little expired.
Yeah.
So, and then habit six is about, it's kind of the output of habits four and five, which is synergy. We can do more working together than we could on our own. Mm-hmm. And then habit seven, the last habit, is about sharpen the saw, which is continuous improvement. We got to continually be, you know, bettering ourselves both physically, socially, emotionally, you know, in different ways. So yeah. Those are the habits.
Hey, and to echo it, you'll find everything Franklin Covey does. And we have a lot of different solutions, but everything we do is inside out. It's based on that assumption that you can't have any relationship, you can't work in any organization until you're the kind of person that people want to work with.
So that's powerful.
Yeah, every bit of our development starts with you first. And we love that. We think that that's effective. We think that you're skipping a step if you leap ahead. Yeah.
Well, tell me what the guys, in your experience, what has been the biggest resistance of people wanting to go from the inside out? Come on, talk to me. What's the biggest resistance when you walk into an organization or a team, or even, you know, what is the biggest resistance you get?
They want the result now. And as leaders, our temptation is to jump to the solution and what you want to be able to get people to do to interact with each other and things. And where you have the most impact is if you start with the paradigms of the person and the way they see it, and then you dive into the skills and the things that they need to do. Mm-hmm. And what we found is that if we develop somebody by trying to teach them new skills, new things to do, that we can have incremental results. But if we want exponential results, if we truly want to change the organization and the impact that they have, we have to go after the way they see it. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. If we can go after their paradigms and figure out, okay, so what's the way that they actually picture this? And then to give them the right views of what it should be, then we have dynamic impact on them.
Yeah, the whole concept of a paradigm shift, it's very, very challenging, and that speaks to the work that you guys do, because, you know, having someone change their mindset, people can get pretty caught up in that. So what big hurdles do you see in that personal transformation?
Why on earth do I want to change my mind if it's been working for me all these years?
Because don't you know I'm already right?
Yeah, and the thing is, and everybody else is wrong, and so everybody else needs to change their mindset, not me.
Well, getting back to Doug's point, you know, we have this tendency to want to focus on behavior, for example. Yeah. We don't want to start with inside out also means that we start with the way we think.
Yeah.
Stephen Covey made a statement, you know, if you want to focus on, if you want to have significant impact, focus on the way that you see the world. Don't focus on your behavior. Do you remember the quote, Doug?
That's pretty close.
That's pretty close.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
I'm drawing a blank on it, but it's
what it is now.
Yeah, the idea is that we want to jump to behavior. We want to jump to the things that people do rather than the way we see the world. And it's, you know, the reality is, it's like Abraham Lincoln said, you know, the ancestor of every action is thought. James Allen said, the outer world of circumstances shapes itself to the inner world of thought. So all processes start with our thinking and how it originates there, and ultimately our thinking impacts our behaviors.
Yeah, we have an organization right now that what they're trying to do, they have tens of thousands of leaders. And what they're trying to do right now is they're saying, we're moving the company to a whole new operational sense. We're going to change this company, and we're going to take it to a level that we need new type of leaders. And what they have to do is they have to figure out what that new type of leader is. And then they got to get, before they start training everybody on it, they actually have to have everybody see that picture. Because if they can understand the picture, if they can view it, if they can see it, then you're not pushing them. They're actually helping you along.
Getting a buy-in from them. Am I on the right track there?
Okay. Define your objective. Yeah. And then when you get to that point, that's whole step two, yeah. Right? That's habit two is, you know, beginning with the end in mind. Okay. If you have that end, you got it.
Mike is all over these habits. You know,
I'm just learning about it. I'm all in now. Man.
Let me just echo this or talk about this for a second. Mark, you said that win-win, habit four, is an attitude. Am I correct there?
Yeah, it's a mindset.
It's a mindset. Yeah, it's an attitude. And then going for seek first, understand and be understood. Now, I will admit, that's one of the toughest ones for me. Yeah. I don't want to have my mind changed. I am talking, so obviously I'm right. If I'm talking to you, obviously you need to be listening to me. And so when we have that mindset, we can shut the other person down. Yeah.
That's probably the only person that has a problem with this one.
Yeah, I think so.
Because I don't.
Yeah, nobody really does. Yeah.
So think about this. You know, so why is habit five can be so difficult for people?
Great question. I think that it's very hard. And I struggle with this myself. It's very hard when you really want to listen to a person deeply and understand where they're coming from. You have to put your own views and values aside, which is very hard to do, and enter the world of another without prejudice. And that doing that requires an intense amount of character and private victory, if you will. And that's why people have a hard time with it, because maybe they haven't spent as much time in the private victory to be able to have the character to put aside that so that you can see the world differently and that you can be vulnerable, that you can be at risk. And, you know, sometimes it's hard to listen to somebody and to understand them because you might feel like, well, I'm agreeing with them or look at husbands and wives. I do this with my wife all the time. You hear something from her and you want to fix them. Hear this. Oh, I've got the solution to that.
Yeah. And when we start to do that to people, what happens? We can shut them down.
Yeah. You know, we know that if we can get somebody to listen, if we can get them to do habit five, to truly listen in a way to understand, we can change their careers. And I'd also argue their lives a little bit. What we find is I think that a lot of people kind of want to listen, and a lot of them don't have the skills, so they'll do it incorrectly in a way that keeps you at kind of a surface level. If you learn how to listen, and like Mark said, I think that, you know, the private victory habits really allow you to become the type of person that allows you to listen. But if you are the kind of person that can listen, it's like oxygen to people. They're truly not used to being listened to. They don't know what it feels like. And when you listen to someone, I don't mean to over-exaggerate, but it can be emotional for them because they're just not used to it. And it's really refreshing, and it is like oxygen.
How do you think that would look in a family, environment, a son and a daughter? Seek first, understand, be understood.
Well, it can be pretty transformational. I mean, I told you a story the other day that I worked for a guy that, when he started out his marriage, it kind of started on the wrong road. He presented her with a prenuptial agreement, 2 days before they got married. Their marriage started off on a bad trend, and it was kind of poisoned for a long time, and he said that, you know, one day he was sitting in his basement reading the Seven Habits book, and he read Habit 5, and he said, I'm going to go up and try this on my wife. And he literally went upstairs and started for the first time to listening, you know, just asking questions and, you know, empathically listening and applying right. the skills that Doug was trying about. And he said, within 5 minutes, he said, my wife broke into tears. And he said, you know, did I do something wrong? What just happened there? And he's the woman said, you know, this is the first time you've listened to me in 4 years. Mm-hmm. And like Doug said, this is so impactful to people and impactful in their lives that it's sometimes when they're listened to, finally, it's like oxygen that just hits them.
Well, it seems to me that, you know, this is all transitional. You work, you know, life. I mean, they're habits for life, so you know that's not mm-hmm. just, you know, one facet. But it also seems to me this stuff's kind of evergreen. You can go back to it, and it's going to speak to you maybe in a different way than if the first time you read it, right?
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, please, Doug.
It's just why Seven Habits is a bestseller for years and years. Is they're just principles, and I don't care if you lived 1,000 years ago or if you live 1,000 years from now. They're still going to be principles. They're the same thing. Mm-hmm. And I work for the company, and I do my best to do this stuff. And I have to go back and re-remember, relearn the things that I know really well all the time. I don't care. Sometimes I have executives go, oh, that's just time management, or that's just listening or something. That's just basic skills. And do you know that I think it's as applicable or more applicable for an executive that's been doing it for 35 years, that they can tune it up and take it to the next level as much as the person starting their career? Because the principles apply. They just do.
Well, and as things change, too, in the environment, you know, we're living in a different age where technology is demanding people's times, and it's hard for my kids to even get their head outside of their phone. And you know, those kind of things tear away from the fabric of people's relationships. And you know, you ask the question, why is it relevant? Is relevant today? Well, in many ways, it becomes more relevant because we have a tendency to dehumanize ourselves and to get away from it. And so, as time goes on, I think there's actually more application for it.
Yeah, with all the electronics and So there's been some changes, in the Seven Habits, highly effective people. And now we in the Covey lingo, the Covey language, we call it the 4.0, but it's actually the Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. And we have revised it. It's updated, and it's as Mike said, it's very evergreen. Tell us about the new Seven Habits 4.0. That's was released just a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. So this is when we say it's 4.0. This is the fourth time that we've actually changed it and revised it.
Okay.
So throughout the history of the product, we invest a tremendous amount of money at Franklin Covey in innovations, and so probably much more than our competitors do. And so this last 2 years, we've put, you know, millions and millions of dollars into refreshing the videos. You know, we've got 34 brand new videos, mm-hmm. revised all the participant materials, the kits, created apps and tools, created a leader implementation guide. So the whole thing has been completely redone, relaunched. And, you know, as times change and as things, the variables in the world that we live in change, we have to kind of adapt it so that it applies today.
Apply them differently. Hey, and then just, Mark said we're a performance improvement company, and we are, but we're a global performance improvement company. And that global part is really interesting because the Seven Habits, when you have these organizations that are across multinations that have all kinds of different cultures, you know, different generations, they have all different types. Well, you see, this is the thing is we don't think that if you think of an organization, if you try and picture right now one that has a great culture, it wasn't by accident that that happened. It wasn't just like this moment that they had a great culture. They're developed. They're built. And we think that Seven Habits is about that. And Seven Habits is global. I don't care what culture you're from. I don't care what generation you're from. Seven Habits is a common platform that everybody can work from that's foundational to an organization that says, this is how we're going to work together. This is how we're going to be effective. And it allows all the other things that an organization's doing to leap ahead and to be that much more effective.
Okay. global. Where's Franklin Covey located? You said global. What other countries are we in?
Well, we've got offices in we cover about 141 different countries in terms of our licensees and our direct offices, and so we have presence pretty much on every continent in the world. We have great licensees. And I told you that whenever we redo a product, we try and make it as global as possible. And you'll notice that in the mm-hmm. new Seven Habits material, it's very global. You know, we have different environments from, China to Malaysia to Europe to India. And you see, all the different cultures coming together. You know, Stephen Covey was a rock star in India. They used to fill up stadiums for the guy. And back to what Doug was saying. You know, this has universal applicability to different cultures, and they love it. And the reason is because culture doesn't stop it.
Yeah, and I deal with small organizations that are global, and I deal with multinationals that are giant global organizations. Mm-hmm. And both are fun to work with, but there's not many organizations that can deal across the globe. The Seven Habits, for instance, is available in over 40 languages. Things like that. And so that ability in today's environment to develop people around the world and to deal with what our real world is like now, we think is a big deal.
What's your perfect client? What's your best client? Come on. What's your best client?
I love somebody that is incredibly capable. The better they are at their job, the more defined they are in what they want to accomplish, the clearer the vision they have. I have some leaders that I work with that it makes my work the best when they're good at what they do. And I don't know if it's appropriate to name names and stuff, but I have one leader here in Atlanta that is slow to move. He's very methodical. He takes years to make decisions, and he sees very far out. He's the head of the organization. I think that you would see him, and you would think that he's introverted. And yet, holy cow, you got to see what he does and how successful he's made his organization and how good he is. And when we are able to use some of the things that we know and to bottle great leadership that he mm-hmm. exemplifies and to roll it through the organization, wow, we can do some stuff.
It's got to fire you up when you see it works, right?
Well, it's great. Yeah,
that's what it's all about.
You know, when you work with really great companies, too, and I'll mention one, Marriott is a great company that we work with, mm-hmm. who they're some of the best executors in the world in terms of, they can put a spoon and a fork 2 inches from the plate every time, and, they're fantastic. And so, we've been working with them on execution for the last 6 years. And I'm consistently blown away when I go and work with their people, because what they can do is they take our material and they make it even better because they're so great. Oh, okay. And so when you get these clients that are really good at what they do anyway, and then they take our content and make it even better because of how great they are, it's a delight to work with them.
Yeah, at the end of the day, Franklin Covey is bottling great leadership. We're not inventing it. We just know how to put it in a way that we can make some sense of what it is, what some of these great leaders that we get to see are doing, and then put it in a format that a bunch of people in the organization can take advantage of so that they don't have to learn from 35 years of hard knocks, mm-hmm. that hopefully they can do this a little bit faster and approach it quicker. And so you'll find, all of you are the same way, but Mark and I, we get to see great businesses all the time. And it's fun. I mean, when you walk in and you meet some of these people, you see their environment, you see the organization, you see the operation. Wow, that's really neat to see. And if, like Mike was saying, our ability to help other organizations get there, that's why we come to work. I mean, if you want to know why we do it, that's fun.
That's kind of the core of our mission at Franklin Covey is to enable greatness in people and organizations everywhere. And we have two fundamental core ideas around that. Number one is that any individual, any team, any organization can become great. We have competitors in our space that don't believe that. We fundamentally believe that people can become great at something. The second idea is that we believe that it can be predictably and systematically unleashed if you can just create the right mindset, skill sets, and tool sets around these principles that we're talking about. So, you know, that's at the core of it. That's what we're all about.
Yeah. What's a principle? Let's cover that real quick. A principle. Tell me about what principle.
So, you know, a principle has a couple of characteristics to it. You know, one, it's a natural law. It's something that is immovable. It's timeless. It's like gravity. If you take gravity and look at gravity, when we say it's timeless, well, it existed a million years ago. It existed 2,000 years ago, and it's going to exist into the future. So when we talk about timeless content, you know, Seven Habits and all of our other material is based, principally based, meaning that it's not going to change. And there's kind of, and Doug kind of calls it the, you know, when you hear it, it's got a ring of truth to it where you go, you know, bam, that's it. That makes complete sense to me. Mm-hmm. It rings the truth bell. That's what you say.
Yeah, you don't have to think about it. You just know that when you hear it, it's like, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Okay, so the habits are based upon principles, and principles, as you said, timeless, universal.
It's truth.
Oh, yeah. You can't argue. You can't rationalize away. Said, hey, it's there. Boom. It's got it. And
that's right.
Gravity. So some other principles may be what? Courage?
Well, there's principles of trust, you know, that basically says, you know, when you have a low trust environment, the speed at which you do things is going to be slow and the cost is going to be high.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's a principle.
How do you get that into your client? When you walk in and you start talking to a client and somebody says, look, here's the deal. My culture is kind of ate up here. I've got to make some changes. This is a private conversation. I need to make some changes. And I've heard about the Seven Habits here and these principles. Come on, talk to me. How am I going to do this? Where would you go from there?
Well, you know, Mark was using trust. And there's the book Speed of Trust by Stephen M. R. Covey, that's Stephen's son that wrote it. And what we're doing is we kind of, everything that we train on is around see, do, get. And like I said, you got to first change the way they think about it. So they got to see the principle. And we can dive right into the skills. What do you need to do about this trust thing? But what we want them to do first is to see, look, there is a very high cost to low trust. It speeds you. It slows you down if you have low trust dramatically, and it costs you a lot of money. And we can exemplify that a bunch of ways, but if you think about it, if I made you right now think about someone that you have very, very low trust with, how fast can you move with them? Mm-hmm. And then I make you think of someone that you have super high trust with, how fast can you move with them? Mm-hmm. And what I got to do is I got to get you to see it, because trust seems like a soft thing, but if I can grab your attention and let you see that this is dramatically impacting your business and how. Mm-hmm. Then we can start talking about the do. What's the skill? What do you got to do about it? And Stephen gave you a framework. I mean, trust exists at a bunch of different levels. It's not just, you know, Mark and I hanging out. Mm-hmm. There's self-trust. Then there's relationship trust. And then, you know, there's organizational and team trust. And, you know, if you think about it, even a market trust, does a market trust my company? Mm-hmm. So you got to break it down and you got to be able to address each of those at their own level. And what Stephen, this is my take on it, is that Stephen has done such a good job of taking this vague principle of trust and boiling it right down into, like it's self-trust, there's four cores. There's character and there's competency. And what he's done is he's made it so that you can have very actionable steps that allow you to do something about it on your team starting tomorrow. And then that impacts the results you get, which impacts what you see, which goes around. And what we think that we've done is we've given leaders some tools and the ability to dramatically impact trust on their team and in their organization right now.
Yeah, it sounds to me, and I'm noticing a theme here, you know, whether it's trust, leadership, teamwork, accountability, I mean, all these, you know, principles that we're talking about, that Franklin Covey is a crystallizer, right? So it condenses the information and it makes it accessible to everybody. But, you know, like a crystal, it's got facets, right? Yeah. And so you need someone to help explain to someone and show them those facets. So how do you go about finding the right person for the right job in that area.
I think we need to change our logo. It should be like a crystal.
Facets. You like that?
Facets of a crystal. I think that was Confucius.
We got to hire Mike.
Yeah.
It's good. He's good. He's very good.
He's good. Gosh, I just lost the questioning. Well,
the right guy
again.
For the right job. How do you find someone to teach these things your clients? Mm.
So we have, I kind of like this. We have these people that teach four disciplines of execution. And what they need to do is they need to be able to go into an organization with a lot of executives and to be able to help them figure out what their goals are, help them to execute it, and to put this all together. It's a huge task, and it's a little daunting. And not just anybody can do it. We liken them to left tackles. On a football team, you pay a left tackle maybe even more than the quarterback. And the reason is because you can't find these people. You can't find a human being that is that big and that fast. And if you do find them, the second you see them, you hire them. And that's the same with these four disciplines of execution people. They have to have done it themselves. They have to be CEOs themselves. Mm-hmm. They have to have a ton of experience. They have to want to teach. They want to have this feeling that they can make a difference and buy into this enable greatness kind of mission. Because it's a hard job. It's not easy. And it's a lot of travel for them. But when you find the right person, they're great at it. I'll tell you, we only have a few. And we don't have many. And when we find them, we hire them right there.
You know, there's an emotional connection to that. Is there not, Doug, Mark? There's an emotional connection when you really enjoy doing that, and you're just good at it. There's an energy. There's an emotional connection. If in the studio, ladies and gentlemen, if you could see Doug's face as he was explaining that, and it was very positive, and that's a sense of that you believe in what you're saying, what you're presenting, and there's an emotional connection. How important is that for a person when you go into a client to have an emotional connection to success of their team, their organization?
You have to have that. Yeah. Doug and I, we hired a consultant a couple of years ago from Gallup, actually, and just came from a totally different environment with a totally different mindset. She's awesome, you know, great energy, and we brought her in, and we watched her the first three times, and we looked at her, and we thought, I don't know if she believes this, you know? So we had to sit down with her and say, do you actually believe what you're talking about?
I know who you're talking about. Yeah, you know.
She said no.
And she said no.
Well, you got to get points for honesty, though, right?
Yeah.
And the reality is the great part about our material, and she got it, and it made her kind of go back and have to reflect on, do I really believe this?
You can't do it if you don't believe it.
Yeah, you can't do it.
Yeah.
We have Chris McChesney, the author of The Four Disciplines of Execution.
Okay.
And I don't know. You guys can debate me, but he may be the most dynamic speaker I've seen. Okay,
I have been tasked to watch him on YouTube a couple of times, and I would agree with you. I think he's up there in the top 10.
Yeah,
top 10.
He's a good speaker, but I will tell you where I think a lot of his energy comes from, and I think that this is what Franklin Covey employees feel, and I don't mean to be cheesy about it, but if you watch Chris. And if you really look in his eyes as he's doing this presentation for the 10,000th time, he thinks he has a cape on. He thinks he's there to save their lives.
I like that.
He is going to impact your career, and you just sit back and watch because here I come.
Yeah, strap yourself in because I'm going to rock your world. I see that.
Look at his eyes.
You go back. You know, Hiram Smith used to have this, the founder of Franklin Quest. And I used to see that guy over and over and over. And I used to see the same presentation, you know, time and time again, weeks apart. And every time I sat in that presentation, I lit up. And it was because of the passion and the energy. And it was like, you know what? I love this. And, you know, how do they do it 10,000 times and not get bored of it? Because it's who they are and it's what they love.
Yeah. I'll tell everybody on the radio, I am a consultant with Franklin Covey. and it's what I do in my private life when I'm not doing the radio station, and I absolutely just love it. And what I get out of it is the aha moments with the clients when you're presenting. And especially for me, it's been one of the recent ones I had was a gentleman that watched Dr. Covey, one of the videos, empathic listening, when he listened to, he was doing the role play with the lady in the audience, the older video. And the gentleman said to me, he said, "Jack, could you teach me how to talk to my son again?" Mm. And I'm thinking, I said, "Oh, yeah." And I said, "Would you just bear with me for a second and just watch the next video?" And I was in the back of the room when I hit start, you know, I had to play the video, and then it was done, and I kid you not, he looked at me, gave me a nod like, "I got it." He goes, "I got it." And when it was done, and we men, we're kind of stubborn about this sort of thing, so we wait till nobody's around.
No, we're not.
And he walked over to me, and he shook my hand, and he said, "Thank you. I think you just saved a relationship between me and my 16-year-old son."
Wow.
You can't buy that. And so when that, even though you're traveling, you got the hotels, and you got the flights, and you got all the other stuff that happens, when you walk away, that's what makes it all worthwhile to me. And that's the world according to Jack. I don't know how the rest of the delivery consultants, but
we have a video called Trim Tab.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that video, it basically says that there's a tiny little rudder on the rudder of giant ships. And you can't turn a rudder big enough on a giant ocean-going ship with the mechanics of it. And so what you have to do is you have to have a little rudder on the rudder, and it's called the trim tab. And the analogy they use is that, you can be a trim tab. You can be the tiny rudder on this giant rudder on this enormous ship, and you can turn the whole thing. And the analogy just rings so true, and it inspires you quite a bit. But the video is a little bit of a cheap shot, and I've seen it 80 times, and I tear up every time.
Yeah. Trim Tab is a very an excellent video. You guys are just a transitional company, transitional people, and it just goes and goes and goes, and you keep improving and keep and changing, and it becomes more and more pertinent as we go along. What have been some of the biggest resistance that you've had when you've gone in? And I know we're rolling out the 4.0 Seven Habits Highly Effective People fourth version of it. What are some of the questions you get, or some of the resistance, or the biggest challenges you've had to explain to people for them to go, "Hey, look, you really need this. We want to bring this to your table."
I think the biggest challenge that we have with a lot of companies is that if you look at a bell curve, a continuum of great companies, average companies, and poor performing companies, we never work with companies that are in the middle of the bell. The average company, we just don't work with them that often, and it's because they're content. Jim Collins said, "The enemy of the great is the good." They're content. They're okay. They don't feel like they need to become better. And we always find that most of the companies that we work with, most of the leaders that we work with, tend to be on the two sides of the bell. Mm. They're either great, trying to become better. These are people and companies that have character so high that they just don't want to stop, and they just want to keep getting better and better and better all the time. And then you've got the companies on the lower end of the bell, which are the poorly performing companies or individuals that are struggling with the relationship with their kid or whatever it is. They're in pain.
They have to get better.
They got
to
get better. If they don't, their life's just going to go in the toilet, or their company's going to go out of business or whatever it is. And so it's always been amazing to me to see these two parallels of this continuum. That's who we work with.
Yeah, you get a lot of companies too. Mark's just dead on. You get a lot of companies that and organizations and teams that we work with that they're just trying to do everything. And not only are they trying to do everything, they're changing all the time. And, we recognize that today's environment is that, and it just is. But on the other side, the surest way for me to defeat you is to dissipate your energy across a whole bunch of things, and they keep changing directions. And if we can get you to, I hate to say it, but a principle is the law of the harvest. You got to plant some seeds. You got to stick with it. And the companies that are great, the companies that really break out of the pack, are the ones that focus and then over time build an organization that can execute and build high trust in a way that can't be matched by competitors out there.
Let's talk about culture in an organization. You know, with all your background and experience, both of you sitting in the room here, and a lot of the great facilitators and members of Franklin Covey that I've met over the last 3 years, you have a great skill when you walk into a team, walk into an organization, you get a sense of what the culture is. Am I on track?
Yeah.
Can you? Yeah. How important is a culture and something we want to talk about also before we end today is a framework to change a culture.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about that for just a few minutes.
How important is culture? You know, if you look at great companies, if you just sit back and say, what are some great companies? Mm-hmm. You know, in my mind, I think about, you know, Chick-fil-A right here in our backyard is a great company. Mm-hmm. They outproduce everybody in their industry revenue per square foot by 3 to 4 times. You look at a Southwest Airlines that started out in 1970, where there was 30 plus airlines. Today, there's 5 airlines domestically here, and the value of their company is higher than all of their competitors combined. Mm-hmm. Those are great companies, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And if you look at companies like that, say for example, like a Southwest airline, you say, well, what is it? Is it their planes? They have better planes. Well, not really.
They got planes as everyone else.
The same, maybe even a little worse.
Yeah.
Or you look at, well, they have a better reservation system than their competitors. Not really. You know. So what's different about them? It's their culture. It's their people. Mm-hmm. It's what makes them tick. Chick-fil-A is the same way. You know. You might say, well, are they great because they're chicken sandwich? Well, I like Big Macs and Whoppers as well. Doug can attest to that.
And you can eat two of them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but when you walk into a Chick-fil-A, there's mm-hmm. something different about the place. I went to a drive-up window the other day at Chick-fil-A, and with my 3 kids, and I pull in and I order with my 3 kids. I get up to the window and I'd forgot my money.
He's a good boss. He always forgets his wallet.
Yeah. I forgot my money. Yeah. And so I was embarrassed. I got up to the window. I said, I'm so sorry. I left my money. I'm going to have to go. And they said, oh, don't worry about it, sir. You know, just pay us next time you come back. Now, you know, what company would do that? And that's culture. They did something with me. They extended trust in me so that I would extend 10 times the amount of trust back to them. It's a brilliant move. So that's, culture is the primary differentiator. Mm-hmm. It's the greatest competitive advantage, and it's the hardest thing to replicate over time. It matters. It's a big deal, and it's a big part of what we help companies with.
Can I use the example or analogy that the 7 habits would be a framework that you would put over maybe a culture to change a culture in an organization? Am I on track here, guys, or talk to me.
Well, so so let's talk about that.
They're looking at each other like, who's going to answer? Who's going to take?
So
this?
I can answer, but
you go ahead and I'll jump in.
Yeah. So, how does the 7 habits apply to a culture?
Yeah.
Well, when you think about what makes a culture great, is one, cultures have to have a common set of values and principles that people believe in and they're engaged in. Number two, you got to have leaders mm-hmm. that teach it and that model it. And you've also got to have a common language, and you got to have a common framework for developing culture. Mm-hmm. And that's what great companies do. Mm-hmm. And what the 7 habits is it's a social operating system for developing culture. It's a social operating system for developing winning teams.
Yeah.
I like that.
These cultures, we don't think that they happen by accident. And we think that they can be developed. And to be honest, we think that the 7 habits is the way to get there. But what's interesting is, like we talked about, I mean, there may be different cultures, and I think that that's a big deal. But, in today's world, I think that different generations may be the bigger deal. And, you have a lot of different generations trying to work together. And this idea that, look, before we even come to the table, we need to make sure that we're proactive. We need to make sure that we know what we're doing and how to get there. And then, you know, that we know how to listen to each other and to synergize and to work together incredibly well, that 1 + 1 actually equals 3 or maybe 10 when we get together. And, you know, when you set this foundation, what it does is it allows you to have the pieces in place to build that culture. And without it, I think it's kind of a struggle. I don't know a better way to get there.
So you could actually, it's like a framework and said, okay, guys, if you're ever going to pull something off the shelf, I don't want to make it, you know, dismiss it, but you can actually pull something off the shelf and said, yep, this is the culture. This is the framework we're going to use to make our company great, make it great. And then here we go. We're going to get out of being dependent on other people. We're going to go to be proactive. We're going to have a goal of where we're going to go. I want to put the first things first in our team or organization. Now we've been able to manage ourselves. And then I want to go for the win-win. It's going to be an attitude. I want everybody to have an attitude with me that we're going to go for the win-win. So I'm going to listen to what you have to say. Hopefully you listen to what I have to say, and we'll come to a way that's better and bigger than what we both had. And I'm not going to end your sentences. I'm not going to tell you what you're thinking. I'm not going to tell you how you need to be looking at the world. And then we're going to look at each other and go, put my fingers together and go, we're going to synergize with each other.
Yeah, and we think that that place that you just described can do work better than any other.
I would agree. And then we were going to wrap that sucker up, and we're going to say, okay, guys, you got to take care of yourself. You got to take care of yourself. And that's going to be the seventh habit. And taking care of yourself is mentally, physically, social, emotional, and physical. So how important is that part as we get ready to close the hour here? How important is that seventh habit to the team, to the organization?
To the organization or to yourself?
I think it's for both.
Yeah, I mean, personally for me, the seventh habit is the personal discipline. For me to be my best every single day, I got to be able to get up at 5:30 in the morning, get out, take a run, go do something that I don't want to do that builds personal discipline inside of me. And when I do that, when I have that private victory, when I do something that I don't want to do that's good for me, it makes me better and it increases my capacity to do more over time. Right? That's what the essence of Habit 7 is.
I love that. Doug, you got something?
Yeah, sometimes it's a little maddening, though, because when you work for Franklin Covey and you got a bunch of people doing this, trying to live this stuff, when you go to a Franklin Covey convention, you can't get a treadmill unless you go at like 4 a.m. or something. I mean, it's a mess.
Oh, you guys are great.
Listen, that'd be my excuse right there.
That's my excuse. Darn. Treadmills. Too many Covey people on the treadmills. Hey, listen, guys. I always ask my guests this question. It's just maybe a little surprise to you. If you walked into a room, Mark, and they said, "Hey, Mark Josie's coming in the room, and we're going to play his theme song." Oh. Mark, what would your song be? Doug, what would your song be? What's your theme song?
Dancing with Myself.
Gotcha.
Okay. I like Doug. Doug.
Talk to me, Doug. What you got?
My worst thing is to name that tune and stuff.
That's okay. Well, you can answer the question now, or you can wait a second or so.
I'll go ahead and tell you mine while you're thinking. Yeah, mine is definitely Good Vibrations by Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch. Nice. That's just the jam gets me right. And I feel like it kind of embodies me a little bit there.
I think Doug may have an answer for us.
Well, I'm going with the Star Wars theme.
Okay, I like it.
Okay, guys. Yeah. Okay,
can we play it on the way out?
Yeah. We can't. We don't have the ASCAP license for that.
But let me ask you guys a question real quick. How do we get a hold of you? How do we go from Enable Greatness? Talk to me. How do we get a hold of Franklin Covey?
Two ways. You can look on the website, www.franklincovey.com. You can contact me directly at mark.josie, J-O-S-I-E, @franklincovey.com. And I can, you know, get any information to you that you might need.
And Brother Doug?
Same information, franklincovey.com.
Yeah. Okay, and go to the website. Ladies and gentlemen, as we get ready to wrap up the show today, we've had two outstanding and awesome guests. We had Doug Pusey and Mark Josie from Franklin Covey, located right here in Alpharetta, Georgia. It's been an absolute honor and a pleasure to have you both on the show today. Ladies and gentlemen, you know the reason why I do the show. It's we bring out the greatness in other people and organizations, people who make a lasting impression in our lives. I'd like to give a shout out to all of my peers and friends from Franklin Covey, all the way in Salt Lake City, all the way down south, and all the way here in Atlanta, Georgia. And I'd like to give a shout out to my mom back in Tucson, Arizona. folks down in Peachtree City, Georgia, and all my great listeners and guests from the past who have been on the show. Ladies and gentlemen, it's been an honor and a pleasure to have the gentleman in here today. And Mike, we are done.